Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here to give us some insight to Game 5 and the rest of the series isn't going any more than Game 5. From the Action Network, Matt Moore joins us on CBS Sports Radio. Matt, know you were in Oakland the last couple of games for the Raptors winning on enemy turf. How shell-shocked is that fan base right now in Oakland?
Pretty shell-shocked. I mean, I think they're pretty stunned. I think there was kind of always this worry, like, all right, wow, they're really banged up without KD. Okay, the Raptors are good. Wow, some of the guys haven't looked really the same. But it was always this sense of, yeah, but they're the Warriors. They're going to take care of business. It's Oracle. They're going to take care of business. And then it just didn't happen. It just did not happen. They weren't able to get anything done. I think the big surprise is Game 4. Game 3, okay, you're out Klay Thompson and KD. All right, you still have the firepower. Steph had a great game. Didn't have it. Draymond played badly. But for Game 4, to Draymond not bounce back, for Klay to have a pretty good game and it not be enough, for Steph Curry to really have a pretty mediocre game in that performance, and for the Raptors to have gone down early and then just looked like the better team for the rest of the game, I think there really is kind of the sense of, you know what, this team isn't special like the team of the last 4 years. This team isn't going to make that huge run. There was never that sense that they were going to go on that huge Warriors run. It was just, no, the other team's better, and that's where we find ourselves, I think, heading into Game 5.
And we head into Game 5 with the same question mark that we've been asking since Game 1. When is KD coming back? Well, he did practice today, something that he hasn't been able to do since he injured himself. What I'm reading is, from the reports, he came out after his teammates. He went back into the locker room before any of his teammates and was well bandaged up with ice after the practice was over and done with. Doesn't sound good for the possibility of Kevin Durant playing in this game number 5, does it?
No, there's been really no indication. It's very weird. The whole situation's weird. I wrote about it for Action when I was out there in Oakland. Before game, when they head out to Oakland, or when they head out to Toronto for 1 and 2, Steve Kerr said, you know, he's a long shot to play in game 2. And you're like, okay, well, he's a long shot in game 2. He'll be back for game 3. And if not, he'll definitely be back for game 4. Kerr said there's no setback, but he also said when he was supposed to practice before game 4 that he misspoke, which is a weird thing for a coach to say. The whole thing seems very confusing. The whole thing seems very nebulous. It seems frustrating for all parties involved. I think the reality is that they really thought that Durant would be able to get back, and the calf just hasn't responded in the way that they need it to. And Durant knows that it's not responding the way that it needs to. He knows he's not right. And even if he can get on the floor, I don't think that he could be anywhere near the player they need him to be. And I think that may be one of the reasons why we may not see him at all in the finals.
And I can't blame him, but that's the case. I know doing sports talk radio and opening up the phones to John Q Public, you're going to get some conspiracy theorists who come on and say, oh, he's good to go. He just doesn't want to play. He's afraid. He doesn't want to hurt himself. He's got the big free agent decision to make at the end of this year. He's being too cautious. I hate it when people do that. Like, you know, you're inside the other guy's body. I've always thought of Kevin Durant as a tremendous competitor, and I don't think he's ever ducked a challenge in his life, so why should he duck this one? I just have to assume that he's not capable of going. Can you think anything else other than that?
No, I think one of the things that somebody that knows him peripherally that I spoke with said that one of the things with KD is, like, look, if he can play in a basketball game and be himself, he's absolutely going to do that. But is it really helpful for the team if he comes back and he has 4 points and 3 boards and 15 minutes and doesn't look anything like himself? If he's just out there to be able to say that he tried and that he did it, is that enough? If you know that you're not able to move your leg? There's been no clarification from the Warriors, and I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. I think one of the concerns is whether or not him playing would increase the odds of an Achilles injury. Because if there's any risk of that, you just can't do it. Like, that's the only injury left in the NBA, even more than ACL tears. That's the one that dramatically alters the trajectory of NBA careers. And you have to Marcus Cousins about that. So if there's any sort of those concerns, I think he's going to be out there. And I think that if there was a way for him to be the guy that he knows he needs to be, I have zero doubt. Kevin Durant loves basketball as much as anybody on the planet loves anything. I have every confidence that in the finals, he would want to compete, regardless of the situation with the Warriors, regardless of his free agency or his relationship with the media, anything else. He loves basketball, and he would want to be in that moment able to contribute.
We're talking to Matt Moore from the Action Network here on CBS Sports Radio. All right, so KD's injury certainly has handicapped the Warriors. Clay missing game number three certainly hurt their chances. He comes back for game number four. He looked like Klay Thompson on offense, not nearly the Klay Thompson that we're used to seeing on the defensive end. I thought Kawhi Leonard took advantage of him and made him look pretty bad. So the injury I can't use as an explanation and or an excuse as for his defense. I just think Kawhi was that much better. Agree or disagree?
I agree. Part of it is that one of the things that makes Thompson a great defender is he's really good at pushing guys to help, and that help's no longer there. The Warriors were not a great defense in the regular season. That was under the radar, and we were all like, well, they're just not trying because it's the regular season. And they didn't try, but you also, I think, built bad habits. They weren't a good defense versus the Clippers. They weren't a good defense versus the Rockets. They weren't a good defense versus the Blazers. They had a bad defensive showing versus the Blazers. They just outscored them. And so we shouldn't be necessarily surprised. They've been telling us all year that this isn't a great defense, and it's just now that we're able to see that when you run into a defense that can stop them, when they're injured, when they're limited, it's really kind of started to hurt them.
But they've got Klay Thompson, who's a good defensive player. They've got Draymond Green, who's a very good defensive player. They've got Andre Iguodala, whose claim to fame is that he's a good defensive player. How do you have three guys like that and not be a good defense?
I think Iguodala is not the same guy that he was 4 years ago. It's been a long time since that peak of his defensive prowess. I think Draymond's not the same guy. I think he played great in the first round, but I do think that we've seen signs this year of him not being quite as sharp, quite as physical, quite as quick on reaction in terms of how he's able to move. I think Thompson, when you've got him on an injured leg with no help behind him, I think the part of it in the NBA right now is that so much of it is systemic. It's about how guys play together. And the Warriors haven't played great defense together all year, and it's these slow degradations in Iguodala and Livingston, and their bench is worse, and all these things add up to where you no longer have the ability to hit the gear that you need to play the level of defense that we've seen from them in the past.
One of my theories has been, since after game number three, when they certainly didn't do the job defensively and come back with the effort they did in game number four, I think that it's just taking its toll, that Seth and Clay and Andre and Draymond have been there for five runs now. And you play into the NBA final five times. That's adding another season to your body, and you're doing it right on top of each other. I think it goes to point out what LeBron James did going to eight in a row, even that much more. But nobody's gone to five straight NBA finals since the Celtics back in the 60s. I think they're just running out of gas. How about you?
I agree. And I think part of it, I wrote about this a couple times towards the end of the regular season and in the playoffs. I think there's diminishing returns for winning. I think when you win that first title, you're hungry. This is a new experience. Nobody can take this away from you. The second title, you're like, okay, you know, I want to be able to prove everybody wrong that we can't get back there and show the haters wrong. You go back a third time, and you're like, okay, it's getting harder. But I know what to do now. I've done it so much that I can still get through this. You're now at this point. What are you really pushing for? It's just harder to have that motivation. Nobody's really knocked them off since the Cavs in 2016, and they feel like that was a fluke because of injuries and Draymond suspension. I think there's diminishing returns as guys get older and all these things tick, tick, tick away. Because one thing was readily apparent. The Raptors are hungry. They every single possession of that second half, they battled and fought. They wanted to win every single possession, and that showed. And I think that's part of this, is that the Warriors, if you're in the finals, you got a chance for a championship, and they're trying to get themselves to be like, this is important, this is a big moment, I can win a title. But you're like, I have three titles. I've done this. I know I can do this. And I think it's harder for them to get to the level of desperation that the Raptors are playing at every possession.
Has Nick Nurse outcoached Steve Kerr to this point?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's only so much that Kerr can do given the bench and how it's constructed, and a lot of their default options go to Kevin Durant, and they've got, I think Draymond Green's played really badly in this series. He's been outplayed by Pascal Siakam. That's just play. But I think Nurses have made more tactical adjustments. He's thrown more at Kerr to get him off of what they want to do. He's managed to limit them. They haven't been able to make the same kind of adjustments. I think one thing is, the Warriors were able to make a series of tactical adjustments in game two in their win, getting guys moving off screens, using Curry's gravity to get guys open at the rim. The Raptors made adjustments and shut that down, and the Warriors have had no counter response in the two games since. I absolutely think that Curry's been out-coaching the series.
You probably heard the story I've been talking about here on the air for the last hour or so. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch made an error today. They typed up a letter that was going to be sent out from the chairman of the board of the Blues that they were going to put on their e-edition as soon as the game ended. If the Blues won the Stanley Cup, oops, somebody put it up and posted it before tonight's game is being played. And I said, that's as good bulletin board material as you're going to get. Coming into this series, the Raptors were a 3-1 underdog. With Durant, quote-unquote, being a question mark, the Warriors were still 3-1 to win this thing before it started. Do you think that the Raptors have gotten to where they've gotten, at least in part, because they're playing the underdog role, that people didn't give them a chance, that their accomplishments in the Eastern Conference were undersold, and that that's working for them, at least from a motivational standpoint?
I don't think so. Just because of the way this Raptors group is kind of put together, they're very businesslike. They show up, they do their job, they go home. You don't have a whole lot of explosive personalities on that team. I mean, look, it's easy to look at Kawhi and go, not an explosive personality. But even Kyle Lowry, he's surly, but Kyle's not necessarily like a really deep emotional guy that's like steaming with I'm going to prove you wrong. Marcus Gasol's not built that way. Serge Ibaka's not built that way. None of their key guys really are of that mindset. You got two guys there from the Spurs organization, which keeps things calm, cool, and collected at all times. I think one of the things that's been actually their benefit is that they haven't gotten sucked up into all of that nonsense. They haven't gotten caught where they're trying to push too hard. They've stayed steady. They've been a metronome, and that has, I think, really helped them with blocking out the noise of their first finals appearance that I thought was going to really rattle them. I thought this was going to be too big of a moment for some of their guys, and all of them really settled down after the first game and have played brilliantly since.
I think the reason why a lot of people now believe in Toronto, when they may not have when this series started, in addition to, of course, the injuries that the Warriors have had, was the way it went in game number four. The Warriors coughed up a lead. They grabbed a lead in the first quarter. They kept it through the first half, and then Toronto came out and responded on the road with the huge third quarter and then was able to put the game away. That tells me at home that if the Warriors get out to a quick start, it doesn't end the game. The Warriors aren't that kind of a team against the Raptors in this matchup that if they get the lead, well, that one's over. Not the case. The Raptors have the ability to come back against them. That surprised me a lot. What is it about this Raptor team? What do they have other than Kawhi Leonard being one of the top two or three players in the game? Is there something about them that you've noted that says to you, no lead is too big. They can rally and beat a team even as good as the Warriors?
I think Nurse deserves credit for that. I think they got a lot of veterans. I mean, look at this. Marc Gasol's been in a lot of playoff series. Danny Green's been in a lot of playoff series. Kawhi Leonard, obviously. Lowry's been in a lot of playoff series. They haven't always gone very well. They have guys that I don't think are necessarily going to panic. I also think, though, that part of this is just that the Warriors, we talked about how they're running on fumes and all that. Like, that's part of it is when you really get down to it, the Warriors don't really have any weapons. And when the Raptors get a stop and they can get their offense out and then they're playing up tempo and they're controlling the pace, that makes things a lot easier for them. So there are ways in which the Raptors' offense can stall out. They can really wind up looking very limited at times. But if you get them in a situation where they're have you on your heels, they're much more dangerous. They're attacking, they're slashing, they're making big plays, and you got Leonard giving you a healthy diet of those isolation plays and stuff that only he can do. And so you've got this kind of combination where I didn't think that, honestly, I asked before game four, I was like, we don't think these guys can come back if they're down tonight, right? I asked that my colleagues at Action Network, and we're like, no, probably not. And for them to have responded that way, I think that's, at this point, you just have to say, like, no, look, they're just better. And their ability to just keep playing possession by possession and not get caught up in the swings and not panic and not overreact, I think that's been the biggest benefit. It's like they think that they're good enough to contend, that they can beat this team, and they just haven't gotten rattled when the Warriors have made a run. Every time the Warriors make a run, the Raptors just do their thing. And in the end, that's what's given them the lead, and they're on the verge of their first title.
All right, Matt, last thing. Looking at that crystal ball of yours, the NBA championship ends in game number what?
Five. I think we're done. I know it's easier to overreact to these last two games, but the Warriors after game four, being there in Oakland, there's a lot of head shaking going on. They looked like a team that was just like, I just don't know what we're going to do. Some of the comments today out of the media, Andre Iguodala saying things like, next year, I think we can run it back. Like, things like that. This team very much looks like a team that knows what they're up against. They know that they do not have it. They know Durant's not coming to save the day. I think the mental thing is the biggest edge. At home, in Jurassic Park, for the first title, yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll take the Raptors in this one.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate you coming on board. Thanks, bud. Enjoy game number five. I'm with you. Probably the final game of the season. Then we get to talk about free agents for the next 7 months.
Matt. Yeah, the real season begins. Thanks, my man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.